Thanks for joining us. This is going to go quick today. We're only recording an hour, and it looks like we have lots of questions already lined up, so we're going to get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll talk about it. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. I don't talk a lot about politics. If there's something in the news, something that directly affects the trucking industry, many times I'll talk about it. And, of course, presidential race. Once in a while, I'll bring up some topics pertaining to politics and the presidential race, and we'll talk about it if you want. One that interests me because I'm a big proponent of the fair tax. I think the fair tax proposal is the single most important thing we could do to start fixing some of the problems in this country. So I pay a lot of attention to presidential candidates and how they approach taxes. And I have to say that I am just really disappointed again this year. I thought that we might see some people backing something better, whether it's the fair tax, I thought maybe the flat tax, which I'm not a huge fan of. The problem with the flat tax for me, it's better than what we have, but it's not as good as we could do. And my fear is if we make a major change in tax, it's going to be a very, very long time before we make another change. That's why I would really like to see the fair tax catch on. No chance of it that I can see in any of the candidates. Trump released his tax plan. I've looked at Bush's tax plan, Jeb Bush. Haven't heard a lot from Ben Carson, who now seems to be running neck and neck with Trump in the polls, and it's still really early. That'll all change. I've looked at the Democrats. Nobody's offering anything any different than what we've had for the last 30 years. All we've had for the last 30 years is a lot of shifting around of rules, ideas, loopholes, rates. But the problem is our tax system is so complicated that you can't know what these changes are going to do. Now, of course, the media loves to believe that they know. They say, oh, this plan is going to raise tax on the rich, lower it on the poor, do this to the middle class, close up these loopholes. You can't know that. It makes good news. It makes good sound bites. And then people believe it and repeat it. But if you actually ask somebody, explain to me how that will lower the tax on this group or raise the tax on this group, or explain to me how this is going to affect you, most people don't have a clue, because most people don't understand our tax system at all. And it just is way, way too complicated. You know, you can lower tax rates, and yet people could end up paying more tax because you screw around with deductions and so many other rules. Again, very, very complicated. But it makes good news and good sound bites and gives people to talk something to talk about, even though they really don't understand it. If somebody tells you they understand how somebody's tax changes are going to affect things, ask them to explain it in detail. I guarantee you they can't. I can't look at most of these tax plans and tell you how they're going to affect everybody, because even though I understand the tax code really, really well, and I have for a very long time, I don't know everybody's tax situation. You can't just say, well, this is going to lower his tax because he makes $180,000 a year. That's meaningless. You don't know how he makes $180,000 a year. Is it earned income? Is it business income? Is it passive income? Is it capital gain income? It just the list goes on and on and on. Then that's just on the income side. You have no idea what deductions or credits somebody might have. It really is, we need to fix it. And the best fix I have seen by far is the fair tax. And if you have any questions about the fair tax, by all means, call me and ask. I'd love talking about it. Even though I've said it will wipe out, I can give you this number, it would wipe out 30% of our business revenue as a company. That's a huge hit to take. But yet I would vote for it in a heartbeat. I can always find ways to replace the 30% income. I would rather see it because it would be so much better for the country. I've even done some rough calculations on, now I know what the fair tax would do to our business because we have a tax service, we have an accounting service, I know how much revenue we make off those, so that's an easy calculation. If the fair tax were enacted tomorrow, 30% of my gross revenue would be gone overnight. What it would do to me personally is a little more complicated, but I've run some calculations, and it looks like I would end up paying a little more tax. The difference being, I wouldn't be being taxed on my revenue. I would be taxed on my spending, which I would rather control my spending if I want to control my tax. That way I could say, I can go make as much money as I want. How I spend it determine what I pay in tax. And if I don't want to pay more tax, I could choose to spend less. And if everybody started thinking that way, that would increase savings rates in this country, which are abysmally low. Those would all be good things. So the bad news here is I don't see any candidate in either party that is proposing anything that looks good tax-wise. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Michigan. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I got an oil sample there we talked about last week, and I lost signal, got cut off.
All right, so I remember looking at this one. Looking at again here. You know, the biggest thing I see here is the lead has spiked really, really high. And lead is almost always bearings. And then we see copper spiking. Now, I'm wondering why, if we read the notes, they're saying copper is most likely leaching from the oil cooler. Now, if we see copper alone, that's what we would think. But if we've seen this much lead, then I'm worried that we're actually through the outer coating of the bearing and starting on the inner coating, which is a bad sign. So my recommendation,
right.
We have some other things. The base has dropped. The oxidation is horrible. The iron I wouldn't worry about. It's really the copper and the lead that are concerning me, and I can't see any reason why it's happening. I mean, there's nothing in the oil that should be causing this. The viscosity is good. There's no soot, no water, no coolant, no dirt. Nothing to speak of. My recommendation on this one, I remember, and you may not have heard it, was to first off change this oil so that we can get a fresh look at what's going on. Second, watch your oil pressure closely. And I might even recommend getting these bearings inspected.
Yeah, that was what I wanted to ask you about was the when you say watch the oil pressure, can you explain that to me? When the bearings go, we'll see an oil pressure drop. Is that why you say that, or?
Yeah, that is the, other than an oil sample, that is the best indicator that we have excessive bearing wear is oil pressure.
Okay.
So before we used to do oil analysis, if we go back to mechanical engines and we weren't doing oil analysis, we used to replace rod and main bearings on some engines every 250,000 miles. They would wear out that fast. And some of it was the machining technology. Some of it was the fact that we got a lot of fuel dilution in mechanical engines. But we used to watch our oil pressure really close. And if you noticed it dropping over time, you knew you had bearing wear. So that's why I wanted you to watch that. But I think I would get these bearings inspected so we have a baseline. We know where we are physically, because by the oil sample, it looks like we do have some bearing wear going on. But I don't know why. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to head off to the Carolinas. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Fair tax yesterday, Kev.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to happen this time.
Well, we can still be hopeful, and, you know, someday we might get it. I was calling about the 372 I called you about 2 weeks in a row. I called Landstar, and we're kind of having trouble putting our finger on if this will be like a Landstar or a Mercer compatible truck, and kind of wondering if you could help me, give me some helpful hints as to find out if it would be a Qualcomm compatible truck. Called Qualcomm, they said no. Mercer said yes. Landstar said no. So it's kind of half a dozen of one and six of the other.
So, I don't think I'm going to be able to give you a definitive answer. My initial response is I thought any electronic engine was Qualcomm compatible. Now, first of all, we've got to clarify some things here. Typically Qualcomm was only used as like a tracking device, GPS type thing, so you knew where your vehicle was and you could communicate with it and some other things. So what we're really talking about is Qualcomm or probably ELD, where we need to tie into the engine electronics. So we have, you can put Qualcomm in any truck, but it doesn't have full functionality as far as, you know, knowing if the truck's turned on, moving, that kind of stuff. So that's really what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, they were talking that it needs to monitor parameters, RPM, speed, several different parameters, and I just didn't know if this
right.
one was too early for that or not.
Yeah, see, that I don't know. I assumed that even if we go all the way back, I don't ever remember DDEC 1. My first electronic diesels were already DDEC 2, which is early, though. We're talking 1990, 1991 DDEC 2. And as far as I know, I know it was more limited. DDEC 2 was a lot more limited than 3. 3 was a huge upgrade. But I thought things like RPM and speed were pretty darn basic. But again, I don't know for sure.
All right. Well, I guess if you've got any listeners that are running something that old, you know, if they just kind of pop up and
You know who I would call? I would call Pittsburgh Power. They know more about ECMs and you know, they've got a couple engineers who sit around all day long, you know, in a lab and play around with this stuff. Off the top of my head, if anybody that I could think of would know, it would be them.
All righty. All right. Well, that's all I had to bother you with today, and I thank you, sir. I'll give them a call.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Now, if we could find somebody at there are a couple fleets, Schneider, J.B. Hunt, and Walmart, I believe, are the three that ran a lot of the 11-1s in the early and mid-90s. So I'll bet there's people over there that would know what they were capable of. I do know that the electronics are a little more limited on the DDEC 2, but I don't know exactly what you can read out of them. Let's go to Georgia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for taking my call. I was the one that called you, I guess you could say about a month ago or so, that was telling you about the lease program that I was under, making a net profit of 13 cents a mile, and now I'm making 78 cents a mile. I'm over here with Landstar, and I got a question that I wanted to ask you about brokers. And I guess,
sure,
you know, you shouldn't listen to everybody and listen to the lunch, you know, the drivers talking at the lunch counter. But
yeah,
I just wanted to see, am I thinking correctly or am I thinking right, you know, because there's a Facebook group, and I won't name the group, that, you know, the person on there just sort of bashed Landstar for double brokering freight, you know, and saying all Landstar is, they just double broker freight. But in my way of thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in my way of thinking is that regardless of how many people hands is in the pot, if that load fix my operation and fix my numbers, I should be satisfied with that. Am I thinking correctly in that area?
I love the way you think. Absolutely.
Okay.
Here's what I don't understand. Why anybody is concerned how much money somebody else makes in the transaction. That would be like us being worried about McDonald's selling us a hamburger for 99 cents when it only cost them 9 cents to produce it. Who cares? If you
right.
are happy with the 99 cent hamburger, then why do you care what the other company makes? I don't know why brokers or freight is any different than any other product. Why do we care? Our only criteria, in my opinion, when we're spending money on something or we're in a business transaction of some sort, my only criteria should be, does that transaction, whether I'm buying or selling, does the transaction bring me the value I want? And if it does, why would I care about what anybody else is getting out of the transaction?
Okay. Okay, that's good. That was my question, and I felt like I was sort of on the right track, you know, and I value your opinion, and that's the reason why I call and ask you about it. I think what I may need to do is find the delete button on my Facebook page and start deleting.
Yeah. You know, I would recommend not getting in a discussion with this with most people, but if you decide to, here's a question I always pose to people, and they're usually just stuck for an answer. And in the real world, this happens all the time. Let's say that you're looking at two loads, and one of them is going to pay you $1.40 a mile, and the other one's going to pay you $1.50 a mile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, we would rather have the $1.50 a mile. But what if we find out that the broker is charging $2 a mile on the $1.50, so he's making a lot of money, Or we could flip this around. The broker is actually making less on the one that we want or more on the one that we want. Why does it matter? Why would that change? Would we take the load that pays us less because the broker is getting less, or would we take the one that pays us more? Well, we're going to take the one that pays us more. Why would it bother us if the broker has more profit in it too?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then there's another way we could put this. There's another way to look at this. Would any of us in the right situation, would any of us turn down a load that paid $3 a mile and say, oh, no, it's not right to take that because I'm going to make too much profit. Just pay me $2.50 instead. Nobody would ever do that. So why would a broker purposely give up more profit in a load than he needs to?
Right. Right. That makes a lot of sense. That definitely makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate your opinion on that. I really do.
Well, you're welcome. And again, trust your instincts because you have good instincts. You were thinking about that correctly. Let's go to Nebraska. Frank, we're coming up on a break, so let's get started on this, and then we'll carry you back after the break. Go ahead.
Okay, great. This is in your wheelhouse. The short story is I had a nasty surgery. I was off the road for 7 months, just getting back out. And in the gap, I wasn't listening to the radio, so I didn't hear a lot about when you started talking about the new eating plan and the successes and so forth, but I've been listening to it for the last 4 weeks. I have kind of two questions today. Question one, can you say what the major differences are between the ketogenic eating plan you're talking about and the Atkins plan? And number two, is there a place where I can catch up with everything you've been talking about in print?
Okay, so let's start with the easy one first, and then we'll get to the break and I'll come back to this. So we really don't have a lot in print right now from us, but I just put up a book list. I've read, last count, 70-some books on health, nutrition, comparing diets, all kinds of medical issues. And on top of the number of books, I've read another well over 10,000 pages of research backing up those books. So I've got lots and lots of data and facts, and I'm continuing to do that. So when we come back, I'll give you a couple quick book recommendations. So you can go read them, you can listen to them, they're available on audio. They're all really saying the same thing I'm saying.
Great.
So we'll be right back, and we'll also talk about the differences. Ketogenic or Atkins? We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to Nebraska. I was talking with Frank. So, Frank, I've got a fairly long history on this. Like many, many people, I was very critical of the Atkins plan. I thought it was ridiculous. It didn't make any sense to me. But I've always been involved in nutrition, weight loss, health. I wrestled a lot. Weight is very important in wrestling. I coached wrestling for a long time. So I have played around with a lot of different things, and I played around with Atkins. The problem was I didn't really understand it. I went by what I heard about Atkins, and there's a lot of misunderstandings about it. So two things screwed me up. One was that I didn't understand that you don't want to jump into it halfway it's much easier to go cold turkey, get it over with, because for some people, the initial symptoms when you change over can be kind of rough. Some people don't have a problem at all. Some people go through headache, fatigue. I had all those things. And I didn't realize there was, you know, two things I could have done to make, or a lot of things I could have done to make it easier, and then knowing that I just needed to wait it out to see the benefits. So I reluctantly tried it, had some negative side effects, and said, this is the stupidest thing ever, and I quit. So then when I'm doing this new research, and I wasn't looking at Atkins at all, I was looking at paleo to begin with, and then I started going to the ketogenic diet, and I really studied it, learned it well, tried it, and was absolutely amazed at the results. Then I went back and looked at Atkins. Here's the biggest problem with Atkins. It has been perceived as a low-carbohydrate, high-protein diet. And that's where everybody screws up. Atkins is not a high-protein diet at all. It was never meant to be. It's just been because people don't do enough research, we don't read enough, we listen to what the media says, it was perceived as a high-protein diet. And low-carbohydrate, high-protein does not work. Atkins is a low-carbohydrate, moderate-protein, high-fat diet. And that's where people screw up. They eat too much protein, not enough fat. So honestly, virtually no difference between nutritional ketosis and the Atkins diet. If you do Atkins right, which most people don't, if you do it right, it is a ketogenic diet. I mean, that's exactly what they're shooting for. If you were in the Atkins clinic, they monitored your ketone levels. So there really is no difference. We only perceive it as a difference because most people don't understand Atkins correctly. I stay away from using the word because it has been so bastardized and screwed up that you will fight with people as soon as they hear Atkins. So I prefer calling it a ketogenic diet.
Yeah, I mean, that really helps me a lot because I have the books. Just like you say, I tried it years and years ago. I mean, years and years ago, and I still have the books. And when I compare what I'm hearing you say and answer questions on the programs, I see, like, almost no difference. The only thing is Atkins seems to, like, at least in the initial stages, they don't have any coffee at all. And I hear you saying, well, you know, coffee, but don't put all the junk in it, you know. But other than that, it does sound like it's very, very spot on with, you know, with what you've been talking about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We really got the wrong perception of Atkins, and the one major difference is protein. And here's the problem. And now that I've done all the medical research, I get this. If you go very low carbohydrate, so you're trying to force your body to burn fat instead of sugar for energy. That's the whole goal. But if you go low carbohydrate and you eat too much protein, which is ridiculously easy to do, I was surprised at how easy it is to overdo the protein. Your body will literally convert the excess protein to glucose, pure sugar. You get the exact same effect from eating too much protein as you get from eating too many carbohydrates. And the problem is if you're low carbohydrate, now you get all the other symptoms of too much protein, which isn't good for you. You won't feel good. Your body's still getting the sugar highs. It's still releasing insulin. So you've got to keep that protein really, really moderate. We've been oversold on how much protein we need. We don't need much at all. And you make up the calories in fat, which is incredibly satisfying to your appetite. It's good for your moods. It's good for so many things that if you get Atkins right, it really is a ketogenic diet.
Oh, that's great to hear.
So, if you've got the books, you can literally, as long as you're reading the whole book and you're following it correctly, and I will tell you the mistakes that people make, too much protein, watch that closely. Make sure you drink lots of liquids because your body is going to get rid of a lot of liquid. Now, once you get through the initial phase, what I have found now is that I can drink a lot less liquid than I used to and stay very, very hydrated because it's the carbohydrate load that requires a lot of water to process it. When you don't have the carbohydrates in your diet, I stay hydrated without drinking hardly anything at all, it seems like. Also, watch your salt. Get your salt and your potassium intake both up because when you lose all the water in the beginning, you're going to lose all the potassium and sodium, and that's where a lot of the symptoms come from, the headaches, muscle cramps, things like that. So keep protein low, keep salt, potassium high, and you will avoid most of the unpleasant side effects.
Yeah, and good salt, right? I've been listening to you and, you know, mentioning pink, and I heard some gentleman last week talk about real salt, and so, but the good stuff, sea salt and so forth. Okay, and is your listing, is that on your website, the books that you said?
It is on the Destination Health Facebook page.
Okay. Wow, that's great.
All right. So, and stay tuned. I mean, we record Destination Health. We've moved it to every Wednesday. And you can find the dates and times up on the website. And you can also go back and listen to the older episodes. While we are talking about the health issue, as many of you know, I'm not on Facebook anymore. One of the things I've been looking at doing is being able to post things to Facebook because I read so much stuff and I want to share little pieces of it, but I don't want to get back into being on Facebook, posting, reading, getting stuck in all the drama. It's just too much of a time drain for me. So yesterday I was looking, and on my Kindle I found a way to just highlight some text, share it to Facebook. I don't have to log in. And then it's a way for me to share things without getting dragged back into all that. So I was playing around with it, getting it set up. Part of the setup was I had to log into Facebook. I haven't logged into Facebook since February. So I logged in. I was getting things set up. And, of course, I got sucked into reading things. And there was somebody who posted on there, and I'm not sure why they just don't call the show and talk to me about this. I have to believe if they listen as much as it looks like they listen because they knew all the things I was saying, they have to know that I'm not on Facebook, and I don't know why they won't just call the show and talk to me about it. But they went through all these things that I was wrong about, and I would love to discuss them on the air with them. And then at the end they said, anybody who proposes this diet should be jailed. That is such an outrageous statement. The country of Sweden, I guess, we're going to have to put them in jail because the country of Sweden has now embraced a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet. There are lots and lots of doctors who are now embracing a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet. Our natural diet is low-carbohydrate, high-fat. When babies are born, they are born in ketosis. When they're breastfed, they stay in ketosis because mother's milk is almost a perfect macronutrient balance of high saturated fat, protein, and very low carbohydrate. There is so much evidence. I would love to get somebody on the air. I have made the statement, I will discuss this with anybody, even a doctor. You want to bring a doctor on? I'll discuss it. I've got facts. So I'll throw that out there. If you're posting on Facebook about how horrible this diet is and how wrong I am, please come on the air and talk to me about it. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Oh, Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're down to the final segment, but one more thing. You know, I will say that the person who posted this, I like the fact that they use their real name. I'm assuming it's their real name. It's not some sort of a screen name or that kind of thing. I appreciate that. I like people who are willing to step up, voice their opinion, and not necessarily be anonymous. But I will tell you, I would never have this debate online, anywhere online. It's too difficult. There's too many facts. There's too much to talk about. I'll do it in person. I'll do it on the air, wherever you want. But so if you want to go read this, it is in the Facebook group. What is the name of that group? Let's Truck Friends and Enemies, I think, or Friends and Enemies of Let's Truck. Let's Truck Friends and Enemies is the group. The post was on September 18th, and you shouldn't have any trouble finding it if you go look. So check that out, and like I say, I will discuss this with anybody who wants to talk about it, and please bring facts. Let's go to Missouri. Carl, welcome to the program.
How are you doing today, Kevin?
Can you Wonderful. Hear me? What can I help you with?
I've run across a situation. I recently changed companies. I'm leased to another company. And my first quarterly road use tax, I guess, if the tax, you know, this where they put, you know, where you pay so much to each state if you credit fuel and all that stuff. What's that called?
Fuel tax, IFTA, is that what you're...
Yeah. Well, you know, and I got a bill for about 280 for a quarter. I've never in 15 years I've been driving ever had a quarterly IFTA tax for more than $100, you know. So I called them up and asked them. And you know what? They were doing exactly what you say. Some of them do is that they just bundled the whole fleet together and divided it up amongst everybody. And I was furious because, you know, I'm getting like 7 miles to, and I explained to her, I said, what about the trucks that go to California? I mean, I'm only running in like 3 or 4 states, you know, maybe 5 states.
Right.
And I'm paying taxes for everybody that runs up in the Northeast and everybody runs out West and in every place in between. So she says, well, that's just the way we've always done it. And I said, well, okay, I'm just going to try and set it up to where I just pay my own and I keep track of it. But I'm not sure.
Right.
I forgot exactly how to start. So that's my question.
Okay. Good. Good. And I'm glad. I'm really glad that you did this. I'm glad you brought it to their attention. I don't think they're going to change. I think it is a horrible system. And I think it's a horrible excuse to say, I hate this sentence. Well, that's the way we've always done it.
That's the way we've always
Nothing
done it.
I am a pretty laid-back guy. I don't get too excited about many things, even though it might sound like it on the radio sometimes. I really don't. I'm pretty laid-back.
Yeah.
But that is a sentence that actually just absolutely infuriates me. I don't care how you've always done it. When it gets pointed out that it's a lousy way, to keep saying we're going to do that just makes me insane. Here's the biggest problem. They punish the people who are doing things right, and they reward people who are doing things wrong. Why would we want a system like that? I mean, I know our government does that, but, you know, why would we do it in business? So
the owner of the company, he's pretty open-minded, but I want to get this all set up, and then I want to go to him and show him, you know, how crazy
this is,
and, you know, the owner, if he wants to run his company trucks like that, that's his business, you know, and that's okay, but the owner-operators that he has working for him should not be paying for all that also, you know.
Look,
average,
when you own all the trucks, you're buying all the fuel, you're paying all the tax, absolutely average them. That just makes sense. but not with owner-operators. So the good news is it's pretty simple. I would recommend just going to your home state. You can open an IFTA account in any state you want, but I would just recommend you go to the IFTA in your state, and all you do is get an account, and that's it. And then you file the tax, the paperwork once a quarter. I mean, it's really pretty simple.
So, and I can use their, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with their registration, their plate, or their DOT number or anything, right?
You know, I don't dig too deep into the details on this, but I think what you're going to find is if you start with the IFTA department in your state, they should be able to clarify most of those answers. But once you get the account set up, it's just one form every quarter. It just lists your states, your gallons, your miles. You don't do that many states, so yours is going to be really easy. And that's it. And then you know that you're paying the right amount of fuel tax.
Okay. All right. Well, that's simple enough. Like I said, I don't go nearly as many, even though I'm licensed or, you know, I'm authorized to go in those states, I don't go nearly that many states anymore. And I just want to pay for what I use or what I owe, you know, not averaging it with the whole fleet and me coming up with some bill of, well, it's $200 and something, and I just, you know, she said, well, that's just the way we do it. I just kind of went, well, lady, you know what? That's not the way I'm going to do it.
Yeah, well let me give you worse example. And this is common in a lot of fleets. FedEx, you know, I was very, very happy being contracted to FedEx for years. But the one thing that made me crazy, they did do each individual truck by their fuel mileage, which was wonderful. Their problem was that if you fell outside of what they considered their range, then you got dropped back to the fleet average. So every time I would work to get better and better fuel economy and I would break out of their range, instead of getting $200 or $300 a quarter back, I would all of a sudden owe $1,800 in fuel tax. I mean, it was big numbers. Used to just make me absolutely crazy. I just got a message from Matt, and Matt's pretty up on a lot of this stuff. He says, you don't need a DOT number to get your IFTA account, just a tax ID.
That's well, I've got one of those. I got that. So
yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. Perfect. So anyway, I just kind of want to let their settlements and check it out, you know, and make sure that they're only paying what they, because like this was the first quarter that I'd been in the system over here, and all the other places I'd been, they used it. They figured it out truck by truck, you know. So, but anyway,
they did it.
Thank you very much.
They did it the right way. So you're welcome. Thanks for the call. And congratulations for doing the hard work. It's going to pay off for you. Let's go to Utah. Paul, welcome to the program.
Mega Ketos, Kevin. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Kevin, I have a question. I have two questions, actually, on nootropics. I don't know if you've done any research on the brain-enhancing supplements. And then also, I'd like to get your take on fasting.
That's a good topic. The nootropics, I don't know anything about. I'll look it up. The beauty now is I've done so much extensive medical research, and I'm doing even more. I'm in a year-long nutritional program right now, and I'll be certified at the end. So what all that research has done is really helped me to be able to evaluate something pretty quickly now. Kind of like fuel mileage. You know, I've been doing fuel mileage for so long. Somebody brings me a product, I can look at it pretty quickly and say, yeah, it's got some potential, let's dig deeper, or it's not even worth looking at. So I'll take a look at that. Fasting. I think fasting is a very, very healthy thing to do, and there are lots of different methods of fasting. I'll tell you which one I like best. But one of the things that I've been doing, because there is so much conflicting medical advice, I mean, it is insane how many different opinions there are. They come from what seem to be credible sources, but you, after a while, the more research I did, the more I thought, how can this even be? How can there be so many credible sources with so much documentation saying totally opposite things all the time? So what I had to start doing was taking all the available data and then looking back historically, what worked for us naturally. Nature is pretty amazing. You know, we survived for a very, very long time without and all those other things. So fasting, intermittent fasting, was a very natural state because you didn't have food all the time. I like the 16-8 rule. You eat all of your food within an 8-hour window every day, and you fast for 16 hours every day, which includes overnight and sleeping. When you're on a ketogenic diet, it's very easy to do without being hungry, and it gives your body a 16-hour rest every day from processing food. Fasting is a great topic. We'll have to tackle it again when we have more time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, I told you today would be quick. We're only doing an hour, but we will be back tomorrow. We should be doing 2 hours of question and answer tomorrow and then an hour of Destination Health right after. So join us for that. We'll send out the text message as well. Thanks, everybody.